Welcome to your TK Nexus Coach Interaction Podcast. This is where we bring you our fantastic GK Nexus members into the same room as some of the best goalkeeping minds in the world. Coaches who have worked with some of the biggest names in the GK Union while working at some of the biggest football clubs in the world. Sit back, relax, and let's dive into our coaches' knowledge.
Hello GK Nexus members, it's David here and welcome along to what is the very final podcast of a very successful 2019. Today's podcast I'm joined by the guru, Mr. Eric Steele, and we are going to discuss all of his latest content, and that is all around defending set plays within a team structure. Now we had the presentation going live a couple of weeks ago with the linked practical session around defending corner kicks. Now that went live last week and the feedback we got from that was out of this world. So thank you so much for your feedback and thank you for all of your questions for this podcast too. It is going to be a very, very interesting podcast to close off 2019 in style. So sit back, relax and let's go. Good afternoon, Eric Steele. How are you?
The jury coach is very, very good. Looking forward to Christmas. I'm still the biggest kid in England, so can't wait for Christmas Day morning. Presents, family around. So, yeah, looking forward to it. Just a last bit of work to be doing tomorrow, but that's only been planned. So that's what all good coaches should be doing over Christmas. Planning, ready for any events they've got over the Christmas period, whether it be games, training sessions, or getting ready for January.
Sounds very good, Eric, and I don't know if you know this, but this is the very last podcast of 2019.
Wow, I'm filling up.
Sad days, sad days. So what have you been up to recently, Eric? Fill the members in.
Well, basically I've been wrapping up a lot of the last remnants of the assessments that needed doing on B and A licence, and then I'm doing some private individual stuff in and around Derby area, actually, over Christmas. One or two parents that I've known a long time, I've now got the opportunity because I'm not involved in, obviously, club football. So where I'm sure we'll touch on it, this is a massively busy time. Seriously wrong for me, the amount of fixtures that they've actually put into the programme, where some of the teams are 3-4 games in 10 days. So with having that time on my hands, little invitations I've had to come along and coach the teams, that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm doing one on Friday locally and another one on Monday for an Alveston development team, which I've never had the chance to do. So I'm looking forward to that, because obviously the kids will be off school, parents will be driving, being driven mad, so they'll be happy to say, oh, you're going off to do another coaching session. Parents normally say, yeah, no problem. So they're all fully booked, so I'll be there Friday, Monday, and then obviously spend a little time with the family. So, yeah, I enjoy Christmas, always have. I think it's a great time of year. Get together, see people, so I'll be out tomorrow with my godchildren at some stage. So, yeah, looking forward to it, but then still ready in terms of winding up the year. Something I'll mention to the coaches, this is review time. So we can come on to that probably at a later stage.
Yeah, we'll definitely come on to that, Eric. But I just want to touch on what you spoke about there in club football. So let's go back to your days within club football, like one of your numerous teams, Man City, Man United, Derby County, etc. What is it like being a goalkeeper coach at this time of year with the busy schedule in terms of matches and training and preparing for these matches?
Well, I used to work for a manager and he used to say, Christmas is for kids. For coaches and managers, it's about points. And that really is the attitude that you have to have. It's you try to work your family time around, but unfortunately now with fixtures, and I had this when I was at the big clubs, Man City, Man United, you know, the TV dominates, so you just expect the fact you're going to be in virtually every other day. You always have the big arguments. Do you do Christmas Day, or do you let the players have the time off? There's always various trust elements in terms of that. nowadays they're good pros, but ultimately you just realise it's prepare, game, recover, travel, prepare. I think Premier League got it wrong. I think the fixtures over the Christmas period is crazy, because then they go into times in January, February, they'll be going Saturday to Sunday, spread it over, when teams in Germany, teams in Spain and Holland, they'll play final fixtures and they'll be off for 2 weeks. Then we wonder why our poor internationals have burnout, but that's Premier League, that's what they do. For me, it's wrong. I think we could be spreading the fixtures more evenly over the January, February, as opposed to trying to cram them all in now. And I think what they're seeing as well, David, you won't see attendances peaking. I think people can get too much football. So ultimately, as a coach, you were prepared and you did that, and then you just fitted in best you could your family, which is important to you. But you just knew it was a busy schedule. So
yeah,
just get the planning done and go and enjoy it and hopefully come out at the end with good results.
What happened around Christmas time then, Eric, at the clubs you were at? Were you in on Christmas Day sometimes, and then other managers didn't want you in on Christmas Day?
Every club I worked at, we were in Christmas Day morning. And the only thing that happened was, if you were in an away game, you'd probably come in the afternoon. So you'd be allowed to have Christmas Day at home in terms of the morning, and then would come in the afternoon, train, and then travel for the game on the Boxing Day. If you were home, 9 times out of 10, it would be very early start. We'd get in for 9:15 as opposed to a 10:30 start. Then you'd get back for your family. Most of the big clubs' home games, Man United, Man City, would be in hotels anyway. So you'd literally just get time to go home, have your Christmas lunch with your family, and then you'd be back in the hotel at night on a restricted diet. So it was just depend very much on a home or away fixture, travelling time. But to be fair, most players never accepted it.
Yeah.
I just think what they can't accept is, when you see the programme, it's ridiculous for me. Over the, you know, because now Christmas is in midweek, prime time to have Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, again, then it's New Year's Day, then it's FA Cup starts, isn't it? First weekend in January.
Yeah, that's right.
It's prime time. But unfortunately now, TV tends to dominate the fixture lists along with the Premier League.
So when it came to preparing the goalkeepers at this time of year, Eric, was it no hard sessions at all? It's just a case of keeping them ticking over and keeping them sharp?
It was yeah, partly that, but it was also making sure we got the actual physical development programmes right. You still have to do that, even though you've got games. So if you had a game Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, you'd still try and fit in the conditioning, S&C work you'd need with the strength and conditioning, leg strength over body strength. You'd still have to fit those in. What you would be doing is you'd be probably spending more time just briefing the goalkeepers on the teams, the opposition, the analysis side of it, putting a little bit onto the grass. But certainly less was better than more with the game schedule. You know, if you can imagine Liverpool now, a good friend of mine, Jack Robinson, who works there with John Achterbury, if you look at the schedule they've had, do they really need a lot of training now?
Mm-hmm.
Best form of recovery is sleep, good hydration, good food. That will be the most important factor for a lot of the clubs. And some of the goalkeepers, you know, you'd just be literally topping them up 20, 25-minute sessions, then into the tactical train, travel, play, back again. And that really was, it's getting the balance. And there's a trust element. You know, you would ask, I would always believe it was a big thing of asking the goalkeepers how they felt. Inevitably, your number two, your number three might want more work. Your number one might certain days have had a quiet game. Yeah, I need a little bit more. So it was a definite time where you'd be prepared to ask your goalkeepers what they wanted, how they felt.
And what we do see at this time of year, Eric, especially in modern football and social media, there's quite a lot of fun happening at training grounds around the country in terms of the youth teams singing and lots of carry on at training. Can you share with us any fun training ground Christmas stories?
Without a doubt, Man United was one of the best. The apprentices used to do a full pantomime.
Oh, no, they didn't.
Oh, yes, they did. It was unbelievable. And we had a lady then, Gail Stevenson, bless her heart, who's not with us anymore. She was in charge of the eye testing and sight analysis. And she would do the makeup on them, and they'd do a proper script. It was unbelievable. This was 2-3 days before the actual Christmas programme started. That was always enjoyable. Obviously, most of the clubs you're at, the apprentices, the YTS boys, had to sing.
Yeah.
Christmas carols or to that choice. when I was at Derby as a player, I remember Christmas Day morning coming in, and everybody used to say then, you didn't have social media, so what would you have got? And everybody, you'd have got the boxer shorts or socks. And people were being judged on their gear when they came in. One particular Christmas morning, we went out to train, come back in, and certain members of the coaching staff had decided to nick all the new boxers. So about 18, 20 pair of boxers had gone missing, which went down really well when you went home. So yeah, there was always tricks and bits and pieces going on, but inevitably there was always some form of entertainment, which was sort of like tradition at clubs. And it shouldn't die, that should still be done. That was something that you used to look forward to. And they'd get a great round of applause, and it'd certain players. So yeah, it was good, and it was good to see how the apprentices handled it. It was part of their initiation, part of their growing up process at clubs.
Mm-hmm.
It was always a good time. It was always done in the right spirit, which was good.
That's good to hear, Eric. For the youth players at Man United, doing a panto in front of Sir Alex, that must have been a wee bit intimidating for them at the time. Can you share with me any famous names that you've seen at your time at the club that were doing the panto as a youth player?
Youth player, yeah. People like Danny Welbeck, people like that have done it. They were brilliant. Yeah. And they're really born into it. Danny Welbeck was at that age at the time. Tom Cleverley, who was at Watford, yeah, they were involved. And in the end, it was part of the process. And it was enjoyable. And I think they enjoyed doing it as well. I think at times they'd be trepidatious, thinking, well, what we're going to be doing. But you can imagine getting up in front of the main man and all the staff. And we used to serve all the players then. All the staff would serve the players, you see. It was the one day. We'd get all the meals ready, all the coaching staff. That was our job. That was part of what we did.
Mm-hmm.
So we serve all the players, which you can imagine the stick we got from people like Mr. Rooney and Brown and people like that, clicking their fingers and would come running for them. So yeah, it was. Listen, that's part of it. That's part of the spirit. It's part of what you have. It's part of your culture at the club, and it shouldn't be forgotten. And I hope it isn't. I'll have to ring around a few people and find out what they did at Christmas when I get back to that in January.
Sounds good, Eric. We can keep that for the next podcast then. But moving on with this podcast. This podcast is all around the corner kick session, Eric. So we had great feedback on the content around defending set plays. Obviously, we presented the presentation to the members and we followed that up with the corner kick session. And we're going to take that even further again in January by releasing the free kicks session as well. So thank you on behalf of the members for delivering that content. It's been very well received. And we've had quite a lot of questions sent in for you, Eric.
Go for it.
So, regarding the player that was behind the goalkeeper on the line, so obviously we had the defender in the near post area, which for me is such an important role, but you also had the goalkeeper standing in the middle of the goal, behind the goalkeeper on the goal line. So he was going from one post to the other post. A member is just asking if you could, just for him, could you please clarify this person's role?
No problem. So basically what it would be, whoever you decided that was going to do that role, the goalkeeper would be a yard and a half off his line. The player that would be on that line would have to be looking down the line. And the reason being was if a short corner was played, he was second contact. If it wasn't short, he would then drop onto the front post. Drop onto the back post. So he had two jobs. Number one, he could position himself to see if he was needed. He'd then sprint out and be the second contact for the two men that would be trying to take the short corner. If it's not a short corner, he would just simply drop onto the back post, and that would be his job. Then the man at the near post, as we explained on the day, was vital to the goalkeeper. He set himself up. If it was in swing, 3 yards from the post. If it was out swing, he could go 4 yards. If the ball went over his head, he dropped onto the line, so we had the goal defended. Something I made a massive point. How many times, I'm sure everybody's watched it on YouTube, how many times you see goals go in the corner? Southampton, second goal at Villa. I was at the game last week. Nobody on the line. Somebody been on the line, the header from Stevens would have been cleared. So the way I did it, that was the way to ensure you could actually have two people on the post. And as I explained on the day, nearly everybody has a minimum of two roles. Some have three. And that was the detail that we tried to give the members.
So I put that video out, Eric, as you know, talking about the players on the post and what advantages it does have. But it is all about opinion, with lots of people saying, no, that's not for me. There's lots of people saying, yes, absolutely. So we actually have one of our members, Eric, who's having a disagreement with his coaching staff at the moment. So he's the goalkeeping coach and the head coach. They have a different opinion on setups for corners. So our member feels his goalkeeper is not being protected. They're losing a lot of goals, and ultimately it's having the goalkeeper put his head down slightly. So what advice would you give to a member who is possibly having this disagreement with the head coach? How do you go about that?
That's a very much a tactics board. It's an office conversation, or take it then onto the field. And like I mentioned about profiling your players, so if you've got a lack of markers, you are going to have difficulties. If you've got a lack of people prepared to put their head on the ball, have you got the right defender who's going to go in and around? That's a trained role. It's very, very important to the goalkeeper that if he's got someone in and around him, which side does he want the defender? Does he want the defender on the inside? So then you have the goalkeeper, defender, and attacker. That was always my preference, because the defender can then shepherd the striker away, which gives the goalkeeper the impetus to go and deal with the cross. That's got to be an agreed role. Who's the best at that? So that would need goalkeeper coach and the first team coach to actually discuss that. Who is the best player to do that? I used to sometimes have the smallest, like a fullback, a Gary Neville type, brilliant at it. You wouldn't want to put one of your best defenders in there because you want them to go and head the ball. You wouldn't want Virgil van Dijk in that area.
Yeah.
You want central area. So it's profiling, getting an understanding, getting the strength of what we've got in the team. If we've only got three dots, sometimes the best thing you can do is put two people up front. That makes sure they've got to leave a minimum of three, four defenders back. So it's a very much, this is where I stress, there's not enough time done on the planning. And that would be a great session, tactic session, especially this time of the year where the maybe you haven't got games in the amateur, just to meet one night and just do a tactics discussion.
Yeah.
Get it on a board, and then when the players come back, we say, right, this is what we've agreed. And it's a great discussion point to have. And that's really what the GK coach and the manager needs to get. Are we going to be part zonal? Are we going to be total zonal? Are we going to be man marking? What suits the players we got? What tends to happen, David, is a lot of coaches move and they've had success doing something, but they move to a club and they haven't got the players. That's when you have the confrontation. That's when you have the disagreements. So it's a question of just getting down, talking, get the Sabutio board out, get a tactics board out, and then take it onto the grass. But I stress, as I did on the day when we did the presentations, is that this is something that doesn't have enough time spent.
Yeah.
43% of the goals scored in the World Cup were from set plays. I bet there wasn't 43% of the week spent on how to defend and how to attack. And yet that's how important it was. So if the top level are doing it, we should be doing it. And it will save you points over a season.
Well, absolutely, Eric. I mean, as you know, I run a goalkeeping academy, and I asked a question one night, how often do you guys work on defending corner kicks? And I had 24 goalkeepers there, and two goalkeepers put their hands up and said, we've worked on it once over the last 6 months. The other 22 goalkeepers hadn't worked on it.
So you wonder why they concede. It's something that can scare the opposition. If you're organised, you're disciplined, every man knows his job, knows his responsibilities. And it's such a vital area. That's why we've made a big thing. And like you said, we're going to do two podcasts on it. That's how serious we take it in terms of trying to help members, trying to help goalkeepers, and trying to help team managers.
So, Eric, moving on to the goalkeeper's role, we have a question sent in from one of our members, and he is asking, where do you like your goalkeeper's starting position to be?
Okay, that's very much dependent upon A, the taker, B, the level you're playing at, C, is it in-swing or out-swing, D, have you got a defender in and around you protecting you from an attacker? If you've got a constant menace in front of you, what you should be doing is don't take the position up straight away where you want to be. So let's say you're going to be middle of the goal, person's going to in-swing a ball. So I'd be probably a yard and a half off my line, slightly behind central. If somebody came and stood on me, what I'd deliberately do then is what one of the greats would do, Neville Southall, would go and stand on the near post as the corner's being sorted. Well, they wouldn't go and mark him then. So what tends to happen is if you go to your position too early, that suits whoever wants to try and trap the goalkeeper. So you have to look at, are you going to be affected by the delivery? are you going to be affected by an attacker running around you? If you're zonal, how far they're going to be? Normally, they'll go on the 6-yard box. But if they drop another yard, that's reducing your space. So there's A, goalkeeper position. B, communication between defenders. C, what's the organisation that's been agreed? And we're coming back to it again. That needs discussion. That needs a sort of contact between the defenders. Where do you want your goalkeeper? Where do you want the defenders? Your near postman space doesn't want to be small. He needs to be 6 foot plus, the biggest you've got. Make him put the ball over somebody like Paul Pogba. Because then, wow, that delivery is going to be superb. And if it clears Pogba, that's probably a goalkeeper's ball. But by doing it on a rehearsal basis, it encourages the goalkeeper to A, be organised quickly, get his defenders organised quickly. He's got his position where he wants to be for when the ball's delivered. That's the most important, being in the right position when the ball's delivered, not so much when the corner's given. And hopefully that'll explain it for the members.
And what about body stance, Eric? We see a lot of coaches saying they want their goalkeepers to face the ball. Other coaches are liking their goalkeepers to face basically the penalty spot, face the play. I very much like my goalkeepers to have an open body stance, so they're kind of at a 45-degree angle. What about yourself?
I agree totally with you. Open stance. See the ball, see the man, see the play. What I don't like is a lot of goalkeepers spend too much time trying to point, go here, go there. They must be totally focused on the ball. Organisation done early helps the goalkeeper. Nothing worse. We used to do it when I was at England level with the development teams. Corner given against, we used to sprint back. Back in, organised. A lot of people I've been listening to on the various TV stations. They're saying they can't believe how long attacking sides take to actually set the corner up. The quicker you take it, the more chance you've got of scoring.
Yeah, definitely.
People are so poor in terms of getting back. So for me, it's got to be organise quickly, organise early, get your goalkeeper in a position where he wants to be, open stance, then we can deal with the actual set piece.
Your communication and organisation, Eric, is absolutely vital. And it's something we're going to go on and spend a bit of time on in a few minutes. But I just want to get your thoughts on another thing here as well, Eric. So we have a member whose goalkeeper lacks confidence when coming for corner kicks. So a young goalkeeper who's 13 years old, he lacks the confidence to come through bodies and come and be brave and challenge for the cross ball. And that could be even punching or catching. So what kind of advice would you give to our coach to help his young goalkeeper with the confidence to come and be brave for them corner kicks?
Start off with basic practice that he starts catching the ball at his highest point. Getting used to the fact that when the ball has gone above his head, you lose sight of the ball. Confidence in doing that. What tends to happen is there's a lot of, for me, isolated practice where you don't have bodies in and around. You have to then get the goalkeeper getting used to, even if it's thrown service, getting used to coming and catching. And then the opposite factor is, if you don't catch, what are you going to do? We don't see enough punching being practiced at younger age groups.
Yeah.
That great way of having, yeah, if I can't catch, I'm going to punch. Am I going to have my right hand up and punch left-handed? Encourage your goalkeepers within the isolated practice to punch with both hands. And then you really do need to do practice whereby, all right, if you haven't got the air bodies, can you go and get one of those rugby challenges?
Yeah.
Basically, that's a great way just to start to introduce some contact. But then you must start to do some practice where you've got defenders, attackers in and around. That's the way that you encourage the goalkeeper to say, isolated practice, highest point, catch a punch, take off inside leg, opposite knee, drive and high, hands go high, and then do it on the opposite way. It's my left leg takeoff on the inside, right leg on the inside from the opposite way. Get used to getting your goalkeeper driving off both legs. Too many times you don't see enough work done from both sides. So isolated, work from both sides, try and get one of the pads that you can start introduce some form of challenge, and then start to work with some bodies in and around. But he gets used to having a little nudge. You do it, yeah. Give him a little nudge. I used to stand by my goalkeeper's side and pull the shirt, just about to take off. So he gets used to actually saying, if he expects challenge, that's the best way. What we tend to have is, keepers are away comes from assessing the flight of the ball, then deciding keepers away.
Yeah.
Why don't you be positive and go, do you know what, I'm going to come for this. Get it into his mind, I'm going to come for more than thinking away. And then if your decision is late, it is away, back, defend the goal. But ultimately, you have to go through that process. It's not going to goalkeeper just practicing without challenge.
And I think the environment here is key, Eric. If this is going to be a process that we're putting a young goalkeeper through, We have to make it clear to this goalkeeper that, hey, if you're going to make mistakes, it's absolutely okay. We're going to make a lot of mistakes here coming for these balls, but we're going to do it in training for 4, 5, 6 weeks, and we have to come and be prepared to be brave. But if you make a mistake, it's okay.
That's right, and it's a physical and mental strength. It's not just a physical, it's a mental strength. Be determined to come and deal. Be prepared to be aggressive. So get used to making that open stance, that starting position. And ultimately, that's where it's got to begin, with getting that the fundamentals right first. Angle of approach, highest point, your highest point, catch, punch with both hands, drive up both legs. I see a lot of goalkeepers getting 16, 17, 18 and can't take off left and right legs. Yeah. So they're straight away at a massive disadvantage when they come up against the bigger player. It's what makes the good the great. That's what our member coaches should be doing. If you've got a good goalkeeper who's terrific in terms of defending the goal, that's fine. But the greats are the ones that can defend the goal, can deal with the crosses, relieve pressure at vital times in the game. So it's worth stressing, it's a massive skill to have. It's a massive addition to the toolbox your goalkeeper should be having.
So let's move on to this vital aspect, communication and organisation, Eric. So we've had a member send in a question. So this member works with senior academy or first team semi-professional goalkeepers. So we're talking goalkeepers of a good age here, and they still struggle with communication. At set pieces, they are just too quiet, they don't organise quickly enough, they don't dominate the preparation as they should do. What suggestions would you give to our coach to help his goalkeeper improve their communication and organisation?
Very simple, very quick answer. What you do is you do silent coaching. You run it by the organisation that you've agreed with the goalkeeper. You then say, okay, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to have the club captain or a defender. He's going to organise the first one. The defender, you've already briefed him. He sets it up. Get him in the hole. He's on the edge. You pick up there. You pick up there. However, then the goalkeeper is going to be told, the next four, you've got to organise. And everybody's got to be quiet. So the coach zips it, locks it, puts it in his pocket, and all the outfield. That way is the only way you're going to get the goalkeeper to take on responsibility, and you'll probably start in a very quiet. What you have to do then is say, okay, let him introduce himself. First time, it'll be quiet, probably can't hear him. Second, one of the players turns around, can't hear him. I want you picking up, and that's the only way you can introduce it. So you have to have the coach that has to have the strength of mind and purpose to say, I'm not going to interrupt, and the players know they can't help. So the goalkeeper eventually, and all you do is you do three or four, that's it. Because he will find it hard initially, he or she. So let the defender or designated player do the first, then the next four is down to the goalkeeper. Then you go through that process again on wide free kicks, on organising on sample free kicks, as we'll come into on the next podcast. That's the only way I've done it. So it's called silent coaching, and it's called cooperation between defender and goalkeeper.
And another question you get a lot of the time, Eric, as a goalkeeper coach, is my young goalkeeper's just not talking, he's not communicating. But sometimes this actually comes down to the goalkeeper not knowing what to communicate. So this would come into play when we need to talk to our goalkeepers off the park. We need to tell them, okay, so the roles is A, B and C, and they need to be doing this, that. Sometimes we just need to let our goalkeepers know what they should be communicating.
Exactly what you just said there, a good point, is if you go through A, B and C, what you then say to the goalkeeper, in that situation, what would you expect to say? In that situation, what would you expect the goalkeeper to say? What instructions do you want to give to that defender there? And that's exactly what you've got to do. Show them the game scenarios, then say, what would you expect to call here? And if he's not sure, that's when the coach comes in. Yeah. That would be a weigh and drop. That would be left mark on your left shoulder. Mark it. It's got to be agreed terminology between the defenders and the goalkeeper. And the great way of doing it is just by, again, get permission if it's a younger age group, film certain scenarios in training games. And then say, right, what would you say there? Oh, I'd be saying away. I'd be saying show them outside. I'd be saying show them inside. I'd be saying squeeze and hold 18-yard box. So you have to have, number one, agreed terminology, then give them the different scenarios when they have to say, okay, responsibility to you now in a quiet way, in a coaching way, not on the field in front of people. Get the goalkeeper to build his confidence where you're doing it in a private one-to-one basis,
yep,
with the video clips, then you can take it into the practices.
And if you don't have access to the video clips, Eric, this is something you could do with like a Sabutio board or something like that, or a magnet tactics board, you know, just put different situations on the board and talk the goalkeeper through them and then ask you these questions. What would you want from this situation?
Exactly right. Exactly right. Use all the, what tools have you got? You've got to be adaptable. How many times have you said that in Nexus coaching? You have got to be adaptable to the facilities that you have, the age groups that you have. This is where we're trying to encourage all you Nexus coaches to come out of yourselves and be better organized, more progressions in your sessions, thinking ahead. That's what you should be doing now. So we're coming onto it at the end of a podcast to say, look, this is when you should be planning, but you should be reviewing how things have gone over the last 4 or 5 months. How do you think the training sessions have been? Have you prepared the goalkeepers in the right way? Ask for feedback.
Yep.
Feedback from your coaches. How do you think it's gone for the first half of the season? Goalkeepers, how have you felt in-game scenarios? What areas do you think? Give me 3 points that you've done well over the first 5 months and give me 3 areas that we need to improve on going into 2020, and do that with coaches and do it with players alike.
So, Eric, that does bring the final Coach Interaction podcast for 2019 to a close. Is there any final message you'd like to give the members just now?
I hope you enjoy Christmas half as much as you enjoyed, half as much as Mr. Steele and the family. You will have had a great Christmas and New Year. I'd like to thank David, you in particular, for again looking to progress GK Nexus. I think we've done that with the help of the members. You've done terrific. Membership's up. We're getting more and more really, really good feedback from the guest coaches that you've had. And I hope all the members have really appreciated all the work that's been done by yourself. I personally thank you for that. I want to wish all the members a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Continued progress within your individual roles and clubs that you've got. And look forward to receiving more of your very, very good questions. These podcasts have become so good and it's down to your input. So again, I wish you well. Merry Christmas.
That's great, Eric. Thank you very much for your kind words. But I would just like to say to you, on behalf of myself and the members, that your work this year for GK Nexus has been absolutely outstanding. So thank you so much for your hard work and your dedication to the GK Nexus platform. I know the members appreciate it, and I really do appreciate it. So thank you very much.
No problem, David. Look forward to speaking to you all in 2020.
Okay, Eric. Have a great Christmas.
Thank you. All the best. For Happy New Year!
Wow, what a podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you once again to Eric for joining me today, and thank you to you guys for tuning in to what was the very final podcast of 2019. But do not worry, that was not your final fix of GK Nexus content for the year, because on the 30th of December, we have going live a brand new webinar with Dan Abrahams, leading sports psychologist, and that is all around supporting the youth goalkeeper. We go into so much details about tools and techniques that we can use to support our young goalkeepers. So tune in for that. It is a fantastic webinar. And before I let you go, guys, I just want to take this opportunity to thank you so much for your support in 2019. It has been an incredible year with new members continuing to join every single month, but most importantly, our existing members continuing to support us in what we are trying to do and achieve with this platform. Your support means so much to me personally. I was a Scotsman with a dream in 2017 about creating a worldwide platform to help and support and educate goalkeeper coaches just like me. And thank you to you guys. You have made a dream become reality. So I wish you all a very Merry Christmas. I hope you and all of your family have a fantastic and relaxing time. I hope when the time comes, you bring in the new year in style. And I wish you the best for 2020. And I look forward to continuing to serve you, our fantastic members, in the year 2020. Good luck and Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thanks for listening. And of course, interacting with our GK Nexus coaches. Remember, every week you have the opportunity to pick the brains of some of the best goalkeeper coaches in the world. If you'd like any guidance on your coaching journey, please let us help. Reach out to us with your questions by emailing us at contact@gknexus.com.